Welcome to MeFlow Magic, a podcast for the investor generation. I'm Phil Knipe. Each week, I sit down with MeFlow founder Josh Schuler to discuss all things retail investing, what it means, how to get there, and how simple practices can lead to proven results. With new retail investors entering the market daily, this show exists to bring institutional ideas to you, the investor generation. To learn more about how MeFlow ideas can shape your approach to investing, check us out at MeFlow.com. And with that, let's get into the show. So Josh, at the end of our episode last week, I had a joke that flopped. It failed relatively flat, and I blame you for that. But hey, what is a podcast without a dad joke, right? I mean, I'm a dad,
yeah.
You're a dad.
Especially with two dads. Yeah,
it just kind of fits. So I was going to apologize, but then it got me thinking. This is actually a perfect segue, because while we're talking about dads and generations,
yeah,
how's this for a segue? We talk about MeFlow Magic as a podcast for the investor generation, right?
Yeah,
that's a very interesting, I think, take on what the investor generation is, or at least you and I both have interesting takes on what the investor generation is.
Mm-hmm.
We are a generation that is, you might say, different from other generations. I think in order to have an investor generation, it implies that there is another type of generation out there, and they may view risk differently than we do, right? They may have a different definition of implied risk and risk mitigation. So It just got me thinking, why not have a talk about what the investor generation is and what that means for those that maybe look at things differently?
All right, let's talk about the investor generation. By definition, this is a group of people who got started in active investing after 2020. So this represents actually a large portion of all current active investors. It's 15% of all current active investors started after 2020. And that's one mark, that, you know, just this massive amount of new people that have come into active self-directed investing. That's one mark of this generation. The other one is that historically, if we talk about the typical demographic of an investor or someone who's interested in investing, dude, it's the old white man club. It is not diverse by race or gender or age. This new investor generation is all that the prior generations is not. It is young. It's diverse racially. It's diverse by gender, by socioeconomic class. And this is bringing all kinds of new ideas to investing that did not exist prior to 2020. And you know, the inciting event, the catalyst for all of this was we told everybody to go home for a year while we were working through a pandemic.
Yeah, sure.
And so people are bored and, you know, like, what can they do? And so one of the things that happened as a result of being at home in a pandemic, and at the same time you have technologies like platforms like Robinhood and Webull and other no-cost brokerages that are making it so much easier for people to open accounts and to start doing investing and not even having to have like the full amount for a share, right? This idea of fractional investing. Now I can say, oh, I want Tesla. Well, I can't afford like a share of Tesla, let alone 100 shares, but I could buy $25 worth of Tesla, right? Now all of a sudden it's accessible to a whole lot more people than ever before. And I think this is actually really exciting for the future of corporate finance and the future of active investing.
Yeah, it's very exciting. But also intelligence levels, I think, you know, full disclosure, I'm not that smart. I'm not a mathematician. I have a degree in business that I don't use. I don't even know what my degree is in. I do happen to run a business, which I don't know. We can talk about that maybe another time.
A successful business, right?
I mean, yeah, but I understand the marketing side of things, but I don't understand the math necessarily, right? Gotcha. I mean, I have an accountant that does that for me. So
sure,
to be able to trade a fractional share at almost nothing, yeah, that's very appealing. Yeah. That makes sense.
Very,
for me,
it's very appealing.
There's not a lot of risk there. But even if there was, I mean, there is something enticing about, you know, just the possibility of owning a share of Apple, right? Like this sexy company, Apple, you know, trading at, you know, $150 a share or whatever. Okay, well, like you said, what if I had $25 to invest in Apple? I might want to do that.
Yep.
Or Tesla.
That's right. So we've talked about two of the markers of this investor generation. So the sheer number of them, the fact that they're more diverse from a gender, race, socioeconomic. There's one other kind of key distinctive of this generation, and that is what types of ideas they're interested in and are exploring. And that's where they get even more markedly different than generations before in terms of what types of ideas, opportunities are they looking for, not just in buying and selling stocks, Like that's the one that's always well known. You know, there's other things around mutual funds and ETFs that people have known, but this group has started to look at auction mechanics and market mechanics. So like the meme stocks, part of that has to do with this whole feedback loop between who holds positions of shares, who's loaned positions of shares, who's hedged against those using options. And they're diving into some mechanics that really, prior to the meme stock movement, was really kind of held close to the chest of Wall Street. And you know, Wall Street's not too excited about that. I mean, that's caused some pretty big losses for some firms as a result. But it's this types of ideas that they're going after, and they're active in options. Now, we've had other option trading booms before. I mean, this isn't the first time that that's happened, but it's definitely one where they are going after them and going after them aggressively. I think the distinctive here than in the past is that they're a lot of these investors, not just retail, also institutional, are using what we call zero DTE options. So that means you're buying an option that expires on the same day. So that means if you don't get out of it by the end of the day, it's worth zero, depending on where the stock price ends. But whether, like, if it has a value at the end of the day, it will just convert to cash. Like, it doesn't exist as anything past that day. And right now, about 50% or more of all volume in options on a given day in the S&P 500 is being traded in zero DTE options. And this is a function of one, they're very volatile. So it's all about the opportunity. Like, oh man, these things explode. I mean, some of these things gain 500% in a day, which is, you know, fascinating. And this is being fed because the exchanges are bringing to the market products that expire every day. Not 10 years ago, there were essentially monthly options or quarterly options. And then, you know, through the early part of my tenure, they started introducing weeklies so that, you know, there would be an option that would expire every Friday. Now in the S&P complex, there is an option that expires every day of the week. So you can trade a contract that trades and expires Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And that's where the bulk of the movement is going in, or in the participation. One of the things that's happening in the mechanics of the markets that's really fascinating is that, you know, we've talked about that the average 20-year adjusted or inflation-adjusted return of the S&P 500 is 6.2%. So right now, on average, the S&P 500 is doing between 1.5% to 2% in range per day, high to low, okay? But if you look inside of that day, we're often seeing somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 to 4.5%. So we're almost doing the 20-year average, inflation-adjusted average in movement every day. And that is largely driven by the participation in these options. And because they're so volatile, it's causing the feedback chain of market makers and hedgers to accept and adjust to those prices, and then makes it funky. So it's a fascinating world to live in. It's one that, you know, it talks about the opportunity. I talked about some of these options that, you know, explode. Now, as is the case with most generations when they come to investing, they start by talking about opportunity. So, like, you know, why are some of these kids getting, some kids, some not so much kids, some dads, no doubt, are in part of this, are doing these options because they're thinking, oh, I could get this to 500 times. Or I could be this, you know, by the end of the day. While that's true, there's something that they're discounting, and that's the risk. And, you know, if there's a skill that this generation, if they're going to survive, is going to have to learn, is how to know when they're wrong. And you talk to, you know, anybody who's lasted in markets over any period of time and has actually been able to show consistent, predictable gains, their conversation is typically not around how much money they can make. It's how much they can lose and how to know that they're wrong so they can preserve capital and exit the ideas that are not working, which this requires knowing that they're not working and knowing how to know that they're not working so that they put capital to work and things that do work. I mean, that's one of the reasons why, like, all of the drips from MeFlow, when each drip comes out, I mean, yes, it talks about the opportunity, but the next question is, well, how much am I going to risk for that opportunity? And then the next input is, well, how will we know that we're wrong? We got to know that we're wrong. It's like one of the key skills that a successful investor needs to know. And I mean, that's something that you and I will be talking about forever because it's so crucial and really elusive for people.
So Josh, what I think I hear you're saying is that the generation before us, or, you know, this other generation, was all concerned about risk. And, you know, the first question they're asking is, what is the risk? Now, this investor generation, the byproduct of the meme stocks, they're only asking themselves, what is the reward, right? And so what I think I hear you saying is that there's a balance in there somewhere. And what MeFlow can do is come along and talk about the both and.
Yes, and prior generations think about risk to some degree. I mean, conversations that I'm having right now of people that I would put in, you know, prior investing generation paradigms, they're using approaches that they believe are void of risk that actually are shown to not have as much mitigation of risk as they think they do. And they're doing a lot of talking to avoid that. So how they're kind of thinking about the risk thing is by muting the expectations of opportunity. So like the financial industry has done a fantastic job of getting you and me and most Americans to be excited about a 6.2% inflation adjusted return over 20 years. That's pretty terrible, actually. Today in an environment where we're seeing 7-8% inflation, now, albeit that's not typical. I don't know how long we're going to see inflation that high, but like right now, if you got that 6.2% return, you're not even beating inflation. And at the same time that we're seeing people lose 25% or more in their portfolios. And well, like what if they lose 25% next year? It could happen. There has to be a plan for all outcomes because all outcomes are possible. The prior generations have done a really good job of getting everybody to just be okay to be open to that and to think that investing in equity markets is a safe thing and that I will be, you know, guaranteed some return over time. And, you know, that yes, historically, you're in the markets for 10 years, you'll see a return. How big that return is and if that's enough to serve your needs, that's a big question. You know, what we're looking at going down the road, that could not be sufficient. So, I mean, there's a degree of which they think about risk and in terms of the products that they offer and things that they'll tell people around, hey, don't try to time the market. You can't, you know, so don't be active as an investor. You know, just keep things in a balanced portfolio, like a 60-40, you know, equities to bonds portfolio. That kind of stuff is pervasive. It's supposed to be risk mitigating. Last year didn't do very well at all. I mean, even a 60-40 portfolio that's supposed to do better in attracting markets did really, really poorly. So, I mean, there's parts of prior generation that needs to think about risk too. For the new generation, I think that's the place where they could really just even further distinguish themselves from the prior generations by thinking about opportunity and risk. Because with their willingness to look at new types of investing ideas, like what we talk about in our drips from MeFlow, they are open to, hey, you know what? I actually could put on an investing idea that has a 20 to 40 day time frame and have a probability of success to that that's better than buying or selling a stock. So, you know, we know the math on buying and selling stocks and trying to time that, you know, it's not good. You shouldn't do it. But if you start looking at multi-leg option strategies, the math changes. The probabilities change. And that's pretty great from an opportunity standpoint, but they're still not guaranteed. So that means you got to know the risk part. And so it's the opportunity. It's the place and the posture to get where you can see consistent, predictable results over 5, 10, 15 years is when you have both. You have opportunity that's based on a real edge and the skill around the risk management so that you can know when those ideas aren't working and get out of them and move on. Like that's the formula actually for consistent, long-term, predictable investment growth to your portfolio is high probability ideas that you know why they work and why they should work. And then pair that with risk management, essentially knowing here's when I know that I'm wrong and here's the action that I will take when it's clear that I'm wrong, that will lead to the results that you're looking for. And as humans, we actually have to do work around getting excited that we're wrong. Because if we don't, there have been a number of studies. In fact, you can go to the Global Financial Research Network, which is a subset of SSRN, which is SSRN is a website that is available to anybody where you can read pre-flight academic papers. So before they're peer-reviewed, academics will post research papers on this website that's, you know, free and available to everybody, but they have a whole financial network as well. And one of the studies has to do around investing behavior and something called the disposition effect. And so this is a measured behavior, thousands of samples where investors in low volatility environments will predictably sell investments that are winning and they'll hold on to investments that are losing. Because the mental model is that, you know, well, it'll come back around. So I'll hold on to the thing that's not working. But the stuff in a high volatility environment, like we are currently, the disposition to sell goes away. And so then they just sell everything. They sell the things that like actually work, and then they sell the things that don't. And then like, when do they sell the things that don't? We also have stats around that. And this is relevant to us as dads, is that if you're between the age of 45 and 63, you will sell, but you won't sell until you've lost about 50% of the asset value. So you'll hold it into the ground.
Brutal.
Yeah, brutal.
That's really fascinating. I'm actually going to link that study in our show notes, which, Josh, I don't know if you knew this, you can find at meflow.com/podcast. All the show notes are there. And there's some also, you know, really exciting stuff there, if I do say so myself.
You can say that.
Good stuff, man. You got anything else?
No, just get excited about being wrong. If we did nothing else in our attempt to help this new investor generation and any generation before them have a better outcome, more predictable outcome in their self-directed investing, it would be, how do I know that I'm wrong? Sure, there's a great opportunity here. It can not work out. And if it doesn't work out, which they don't all do, how will I know that I'm wrong? And then what action will I take when I know that I'm wrong? And that's really crucial, because our brains are not wired to do that intuitively. So we have to do that upfront, so we're primed to take the action that we need to when and if that event comes up.
How will we know if we're right, and how will we know if we're wrong? That's the linchpin of it all.
Yeah, it really
is. That's what holds it all together.
We're doing the work for everybody. Trying to help them out.
That's it, baby. Thanks again for listening to MeFlow Magic. I'm your host, Phil Kneipp. And thanks as always to Josh Schuler, El Jefe, as he's affectionately known at the MeFlow Studios in Fort Collins, Colorado. If you like what you hear, do us a huge favor and give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And please consider writing a review as well. It really helps us reach more listeners and ultimately keeps us going. The content, views, and opinions expressed in MeFlow Magic are for educational purposes only. As with all investments, there is a risk of loss, including principal, and no host or guest of MeFlow Magic shall be held liable. You should consult a financial advisor before making any investments relating to stocks, bonds, mutual funds, or whereby other investments relating to money. In other words, do your own research. This show is produced by me, Phil Kneipp.